Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, auspicious, happy, soon birthday, solar return for Pacifica KPFA, born April 15th, 1949, at 3 p.m. in Berkeley. Asked by station manager to say, how did you get connected to KPFA Pacifica? It was Asada Iman in 1996, the station manager, who called me up and said, hello, you don't know me, but I'm the station manager of KPFA, and we played your Sounds True astrology book on air as a premium, and we got this huge response, and we want to offer you a show. Pacifica pays nothing, and it's a pain in the butt to work with. And I go, that's perfect, and I know exactly what I want to do. Visionary Activist Show, which first aired September 5th, 1996, with James Hillman as its first guest, still really good. The solar return for KPFA has 12 Capricorn rising, which is a person sitting in front of a blazing fire, the unconditional dedication of the self with all of its skills. And we go, okay, that's us, team. Jupiter on the solar return will be at 18 plus Gemini, which, according to Steve Eardley's Sabian, is a person reading a beautifully illuminated alchemical text with the aid of a magnifying glass, bringing the mystery of life into sharp focus. So, more than perfectly, our guest, that's what we'll do. So, it is full moon, waxing moon, stationing Venus, emerging from the underworld, welcoming astrological scholar and practitioner Bruce Schofield, that we may discern the astro description and the guiding story of now. Bruce Schofield holds a PhD in geoscience, is the author of 15 books and numerous articles on astrology, science, archaeology, hiking, and travel. He maintains a private practice as an astrological consultant, speaks at conferences, and teaches at Kepler College. He began studying astrology in 1967. Yes, we're teammates, Bruce, and has earned a living as an astrological consultant since 1980. Pretty close. He's on the faculty of Kepler College, maintains a private practice based in Amherst, Massachusetts. He's a frequent writer for the Mountain Astrologer, which just got bought by, we'll talk about that, and many other great things. His website is naturalastrology.com. I'm going to dive into everything he's ever done. Welcome, Bruce.
Thanks for having me, Carol.
My pleasure. So just for fun, a little bit about your chart. I love that you have Mars at 2 plus Libra. That's Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's Mercury. They share the same Mercury. And the image for that is dawn of a new day reveals everything changed. So, yes, that's great. And then other important... Oh, just the last thing. I'm crazy about quintiles, and your Sun quintiles Neptune and Jupiter quintiles Neptune. Ah, irresistible eloquence and the power of symbols and stories. That's very you, right?
Well, that ties to my midheaven, too, which is quintile Sun.
I didn't know your midheaven because you didn't put your birth time out there, but that's good. That's great. So I do think of the quintile as irresistible eloquence on behalf of what we're dedicated to. And then my great friend Sylvia says it's also the capacity to open portals between worlds. I'm like, okay, all right. If it's not true, let's make it true. So eons ago, I can't remember, it was some conference, I'm sitting across from you, and you were the first person who told me of the Venus cycle and Quetzalcoatl, which has been an invaluable guide. And I might be telling it slightly wrong, but we're in that cycle now because Venus is emerging as the morning star, right?
Yeah. I think a key thing to think about is that in Western astrology, there's this big emphasis on space. And so things like, you know, stationary points and aspects are important. But in Mesoamerican astrology, as I've understood it, and that has been a problem because lack of materials and the fact that the system was pretty much decimated by the, you know, the Spanish when they came in and did what they did, and also the fact that their astrology evolved in a separate way from the rest of the world, pretty much, and the way they assemble reality is very alien to the Western mind, and I have spent a lot of time trying to think about that. But anyway, given those caveats, their astrological system is mostly based on time, and the way they looked at Venus was in terms of the synodic cycle. And the two conjunctions with the Sun and Venus, the inferior, which we've just gone through, which is when Venus, we see it as Venus retrograde in the West, but in Mesoamerica, that was the beginning of the synodic cycle of 584 days. And then halfway through, you'd get to the other Venus conjunction, the superior conjunction. That means that the superior body here, the Sun, is in front of Venus. That marks the midway point, and then it winds back and goes to the inferior when Venus is between the Sun and Earth. So that's how they mapped it all out. And then there was this mythology that depends on how you interpret it, seems to hang pretty closely to that framework. And so we're at the beginning. This is the new Venus. Yeah, it emerged from the underworld in a way. It's a short period of time. And we're moving into the morning star phase, and we'll fairly quickly in the month of May reach the greatest elongation between the Sun and Venus. And they get about 45 degrees or more apart, and then they start narrowing in on themselves, and then they come back together for the superior conjunction. And you can't see Venus for a while, for a couple months then, because it's just too close to the Sun, and they're traveling at about the same speed. And then the reverse happens for the evening star phase. So, in regard to where we are now, the Mesoamerican mythology, as I understand it, represents a kind of like rash, impulsive Venus that is rushing out and breaking the rules of society. And it was considered a dangerous period. I mean, if you're trying to make a civilization, you want stability, especially back then, because people were crazier, less restraint probably. So the Aztecs, actually, there are actually some writings on this, some documentation that the priests would have sacrifices and to try to stop Venus from doing its mischief, and people would block up their chimneys and their windows and try to not look at it for a few weeks. And that's basically in the West. Astronomers call it the heliacal rising of Venus, the first appearance of Venus after the conjunction. And in Western astrology, we're thinking of it as Venus retrograde. But that's set symmetrically from the point of the inferior conjunction. The retrograde starts about 2 weeks before, and it lasts for about 2 weeks afterwards, 2-3 weeks.
So here's how I remember what and might have what feel free to correct me, but from our conversation long ago, that you said in the Middle East Venus, all cultures have had their Venus myths because it will be the evening star for about 9 months, then close to the Sun, go to the underworld, then emerge as the morning star. So it's Inanna in the Middle East, and then you'd said in Mesoamerica it's Quetzalcoatl. And the way I remember it, as you said, Quetzalcoatl is a pretty good, okay leader, but then Tezcatlipoca, the Lord of the Smoking Mirror, says, here, drink this balche, this power intoxicant. You'll feel much better. So Quetzalcoatl drinks it and does terrible things and takes illicit money. It becomes a Trump, sleeps with his daughter, wakes up going, oh, my goodness, oh God, I've got to go away. And the way I've kind of worked it with my own is it would be ideally understood as a time for the community to refine ethical leadership. And then the heliacal rise when Venus returns as the morning star, and apparently, again, you can correct me here, it was a terrible historic oops because Cortez shows up then and they mistake the man for the myth. Always a bad idea. And when I was part of Pacifica's news team doing the mythic news covering the Republican convention, it was the same cycle. Venus was heliacal rise, about to emerge, and the Republican convention, they mistook the Trump person for the mythic person, always a bad idea, and then I'll hand it to you in one sentence. So I go, right, if the myths are all around us, if we know them, we can participate. If we don't know them, we're possessed. So here we are again at this cycle, and it's like, okay, humans, let's not mistake any man for the myth. Let wise leadership be born in each heart. Is that in accord with what you might have told me?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think, well, first of all, I think that that's the real value in astrology is that when you understand how these things are working on various levels, including the mythological ones, you now have more information, you know, to navigate yourself through life. I mean, people that don't know anything about astrology are probably more determined in a broad sense than people that know something about astrology.
Right.
Although, you know, yeah, so it's useful to know. But in regard to some of the things you were saying, there's this, you know, in the synodic cycle of Venus, there's this superior conjunction, which is, you know, in the middle of the cycle from the standpoint of the Mesoamericans. And that's where the real judgment, the real, you know, moral judgments take place. And so you take, for example, this goes on over and over again as this 584-day cycle repeats and repeats. Bill Clinton was, you know, exposed for having, you know, dalliance under his desk at the inferior conjunction. And, you know, the sexual sin, right? And then this went on and on. And when it reached its morning, the peak of its morning star phase, which would be the greatest elongation, that's, you know, pretty much when things just really got out of control. But he was impeached when it went into the superior conjunction, where the value judgment, the moral judgments were made. And you can follow this all along. The last time there was an inferior conjunction was August, about a year and a half ago. And that's when Putin had that other general shot down in his plane, and there was
Prigozhin.
The fires
Prigozhin.
In Hawaii,
yeah.
And yeah, right, and oh, and the Spanish soccer czar, whatever in charge of that, you know, made a sexual maneuver on one of the players, and that, you know, so there's usually several kinds of themes that happen in, like, impulsive moves, leaders get shot down, you know, sexual problems crop up. And, yeah, what you were quoting was one of the Quetzalcoatl myths, you know, where Tezcatlipoca, you know, gets Quetzalcoatl to drink some pulque and he gets drunk and has sex with his sister. But there's several other ones, different versions of it. And there's a really old one that appears on a building in El Tajín, which is an archaeological site in Mexico that I never got to because it's kind of out of the way. But I've looked at all the pictures of it, and it does show some kind of, like, craziness, you know, like a radical birth and impulsiveness coming out of the inferior conjunction. And then at the superior, the, as the archaeoastronomers that interpret it say, the candidate born at the inferior conjunction is then judged by the Council of Gods.
Ooh.
And then he's condemned to walk as a mortal on earth. And then when they get back to the inferior conjunction again, he's sacrificed, and then a new cycle begins.
Oh, I'm going to
so
study
I've seen,
everything. Yeah, everything you've just said. Yeah, what were you going to say?
I was going to say that this keeps popping up in various ways as I've been following it, you know, in news and history. And I did have a paper that was published in the NCGR Syzygy Journal in 2020, last year. I had written it before that, called An Exploration of Venus's Synodic Cycle as Described in the Mesoamerican Astrological Tradition. And I could send that to you.
Yes.
I
yes,
haven't
I
put it online yet because,
yeah.
I, you know, it just came out, I guess, you know, about a year ago or half a year ago. So I don't know that they want me to pass it around, but I could definitely send it to you. It's got a lot of
information. You can sneak it to me. But then also I'm having another memory come back, which is another astrological conference. I'm pretty sure this was you. Did you have an Aztec astrology program?
Well, I came up with an idea for one, and Barry Orr, my friend Barry Orr, I don't know if you know him. He runs the Astrological Society of Princeton, New Jersey. He's the successor of Ken Negus. And I grew up in Jersey. I lived there till I was about my late 30s. And anyway, he and I came up with a little bit of a program. And then Astrolabe got interested in it, and they
So,
developed it a little bit more. And
somewhere at this conference, which was very Tony, it was Rob Hand and you. I mean, it was Greek and Arabic scholarship, but somebody, I thought it was you, had an Aztec astrology program. And my friend Jim Denbo, oldest advanced man in the world for politics, had been watching Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was not known as anything more than the governor of Arkansas at that time. But my friend had said, "Watch this guy." So I put Bill Clinton's, just his birthday, right, into somebody, I think it's yours, Aztec astrology program, going, "Well, what the hell?" And it was amazing. It said, "You are, charismatic and rise to the top, but you have insatiable appetites, sexual, and everything that place everything at risk." I mean, and it was like, wow, that's. I'm in favor of free will, but that's a pretty interesting thing. Anyway, that was just the readout off of his birthday, according to Aztec astrology, according to you or somebody's program. I just had to put that in there.
It might be
So.
astrolabes. It's called, they called it Mayan life path astrology or something like that. But it's Aztec and Maya, because they're like, it's like the Greeks and the Romans,
Yeah, well, it was astounding. So then, just to get to what perked up my coyote ears when I read your splendid piece on Facebook and other places about this year 2015 having some interesting correlations with outstanding dates in U.S. history that we might want to dive into, and then teasing it all into pertinence to now in some way, so. Yeah, and then just with the Venus Inanna cycle, the heliacal rise. Well, that's really when Inanna becomes a liberating trickster in her overland adventure. She says, "I've now for my overland adventure, I'm going to rescue human culture," and I go for that too. The return. So, back to you, right here. You're talking about well. And there's so much symmetry even just in our chart right now for today for the show. We're pattern tracking beings. So the moon and the south node are at 27 plus Virgo. That's Elon Musk's Pluto, right? The Sabian symbol for that is a bald man seizes power. And we go, oh, and everybody born around then, but pretty good. So the moon and the south node are at 27 Virgo. Mars is at 27 degrees Cancer. There's 30 degrees to re-sign. North Node and Mercury at 27 Pisces and with a whole lot of company. So we got a 27, 27, 27 kind of hum. But yeah, and then Elon Musk, just for the fun of it, or not fun of it, and those humming. But before we dive into US history, is there anything you want to comment about the South Node and Moon right now with Mars rising in the east? I like Mars in Cancer defiantly, and it does trine. All the Pisces planets. Any comment on now?
Well, yeah, I knew the Mercury and the Moon were in opposition. They're square my natal Uranus now, and Neptune did that recently, and it's been kind of erratic. There's a lot of erratic things going on, but in terms of the world, I mean, look at the markets. It's the global emotional circuit is, wired and charged. Fluctuation is, what I see there. And with Mercury stationing, market goes up, market goes down, back and forth. Yeah, it's a volatile time. The sun has been very active too. The last few weeks, these coronal mass ejections flying out, and the whole, electrical circuit of the planet is a little, fried to say the least, I think.
And it does
But
remind us of what a kind of reactive thing the market is. Like tariffs, oh no, oh they're paused, oh yay, no they're back on, oh no, and it's like good, gr and then all kinds of insider trading and corruption going on. There's all that. It's Quetzalcoatl time to go away. And then come bring back wise leadership to the thing. So yeah, tracking. So you were tracking, and feel free, again, I have what you wrote in front of me, but but here you are. Well, just to prime the pump, you say the attack on Pearl Harbor, which shocked the American public into entering World War II, occurred 84 years ago in 1941. Go back 84 years to 1857. Yeah, I have some things to say about that. This was a very turbulent year, which saw the country's first major financial panic, the Utah Wars of the U.S. government versus the Mormons. September 11th, 1857, the first 9/11 in this country, is when the Mormons dressed up as Indians, first false flag, and attacked the settlers, and then said, "Oh, we see you're out of water. We'll give you a truce so you can get water." And they're like, "Thank you very much," and then killed them all. And Pluto was at 6+Taurus, which is the woman of Samaria at the ancestral well, healing cross-cultural encounters around water. It's like, no, healing cross. Anyway, so back to you. So 1857. So we've got 1941, 1857, and wherever you want to take us from there.
Well, 1773, the Boston Tea Party. And then 1697 with there was a bit of an insurrection in the colonies at that time where the king put this guy Andros in charge of New England and New York, and the people in Massachusetts and in New York rebelled. They actually trapped him in he was in a fort, and they wouldn't let him get out. I don't remember all the details of it, but it was, very much in line with this reaction to authority. It was, precursor to the American Revolution in some ways, and it made the colonies a little more independent. That was the net result. So yeah, and actually, if you take it back another 84 years, you get pretty close to the actual signing of the Virginia Compact, which authorized colonization of Virginia and Massachusetts, although the settlements occurred a few years later. But the actual documents were about 84 years before. Now, I see it in another way too. I see that these events are happening. Of course, there are multiple events that are happening in these years that I specified, and they're 84 years apart, which is the cycle of Uranus, and it's also the cycle that Strauss and Howe talk about in their books on generations, one of which, The Fourth Turning, turns out to be Steve Bannon's Bible, I guess. I mean, he has his own interpretation of it, but Strauss and Howe started out, at least, for me, the introduction was the book Generations. And they argued this pretty good case, that there were these roughly 21-year generations, and it was a four-cycle phase, and the full cycle is 84 years. So that's interesting. I think they got those ideas. I remember looking into it from some Spanish sociologists, but I forget the details there. But you look at this and you see that Uranus is in the latter degrees of Taurus all the time on all of these. Basically between, 20, say 20 and 30, but certainly there's a lot of action around 25 or so. And what I pick up on that is that would be square to where the moon was on when the Declaration of Independence was finished and sent to the printer, which would be an electional, not that anybody elected it, but it's like it's a moment in time, and the onset of an event, letting go of control, dropping the letter in the mailbox, so to speak.
So where
So
was the moon then?
it was
If you were in a...
at 27 degrees or 26 degrees of Aquarius. So this would be the opening square to the natal moon in the July 4th USA chart, which is the opening square is always a lot more turbulent than the closing square.
Well, and we're about to have that
or
again.
even. Yeah, so that's what we're going into. And it was
Well, you
close
know.
last summer. It was close last summer in July, and Trump got his ears shot, and Harris became the candidate. The whole election was upended that month.
Yeah, that was a wild full moon that Octavia Butler's novel, the sower of the so attempting begin on July on the full moon of July 21st, 2024, and it was exactly on the full moon when Biden handed the baton to Harris, and I thought, this is looking good. Oh, phooey. Right, but and then just the chart that I use for Israel has Israel's sun S-U-N at 23 plus Taurus, so for the last year, I've been wondering, you know, with many, what does it mean when a country has a Uranus transit that sort of insists on equality and Taurus, you know, kinship with the land in some way, you know? And I had, you know, desirable possibilities, which don't seem to be happening now. But what's your take on Uranus stationing for a long time at 23 plus Taurus on the sun of when Israel was founded?
Yeah, well, you know, for me, I mean, that was a terrible position for my chart, and I was fried for months this winter with Uranus square my ascendant and Saturn and a bunch of other things going on at the same time, and it was, I felt I was like frozen. I couldn't do much, and I just, you know, paced myself and tried to reduce stress as much as possible. I'm slowly coming out of it now. I got to deal with Mars going over my sun. So it really took my mind away from a lot of things. But in regard to Israel, I mean, yeah, I've been following that for a long time, you know, the chart for Israel, because there was a British mandate. I mean, it's a very clear beginning with Libra rising. That's the chart you're using, right, around 23 Libra rising?
I think so, which is the full moon, right, coming now.
Yeah. So
it's exactly the full moon, yeah.
Yeah, so I think there's just massive amounts of land issues going on there. You know, there could be a giant land grab in the future here, and certainly destabilization of the land. You know,
yeah.
I don't know that the astrology gives an exact answer to what's going on, but any country or any person that has, say, the sun in Taurus and something else is very sensitive to their territory. You know, that's a very big deal for them. It's a defining feature. So Uranus going over it, you know, yeah, A, instability, and B, you know, shifting and changing.
I'm going
you
for,
just hope
for
that there's,
again. Yeah.
You hope, I'm just saying, you just hope for, you know, inspired and knowledgeable leadership. I don't know that we always.
Well,
have it.
Yes, right. You know, the return of Venus, may it be so. Although I'm going to study what you just said in the first part of our show again more about the inferior and superior conjunctions. Yeah, and it was more than a year ago. Well, it was that friends of mine, wonderful progressive Israelis, said, "Do you think Israel will continue to exist?" And I was looking at the Uranus. I go, "Not in this form. Not in this form. I'm still." Kind of going for that. And yeah, the land grab, I mean, Trump has again said, well, yes, we'll turn it into a white people only Riviera Beach. It'll be fantastic. You know, anyway, so there's that, which is like, there's all that. All right. Now,
the right word.
And then just to set us up for the break music, we have a long piece of worthy. Well, we have several things. We'll play Pussy Riot on the other side of the break. And the break music is, it's about incarcerated, kidnapped people. And I want us to honor that, and in a participatory way. This may or may not be in accord with your, let me offer it to you and to our listening team. You know, so it's like as Venus emerges, you know, in the heliacal rise, and I haven't seen her yet in the east, but some people can according to latitude. I want to see, you know, he, she, leading people up out of the underworld, you know, coming with some company, because there's so many kidnapped, you know, and Kilmar Abrego Garcia, my neighbor, right, in Maryland, who was abducted and disappeared 29 days ago, and many, many people, Congress people, were showing up for him, because the government said, oops, that was a mistake. That was a mistake, and it's but we can't do anything now. We can't, and it's like, yes, you can. Anyway, so this song is really written by wonderful ally Jemmy Bluestein and Augustine Leo, and it's just worthy that we animate it, and we'll hang in for this song, and we'll be right back after it with Bruce Schofield. Here we go. The Cage.
I am standing in the darkness with so many people I can't move. But the migrants are not guilty, and they wonder why we are in this cage. I am 7, she is 5. We had to leave our country to survive. But the judge says, I can't hear you, and I'm sending you back to misery. And I'm sending you back to misery. Open the cage, I want the light. I need my freedom to feel right. And set me free, I have been waiting an eternity. I still have hope, though I am not free. I know that many are fighting for me. And ooh, ooh, I see the light coming from the people who join the fight. Coming from the people who join the fight. In my country, no one sleeps, and the road to the border is long and bleak. I am a criminal, that's what they see, but I'd rather be an outlaw and keep my liberty. The ones I love, and with no mercy thrown into a cage. I am invisible, no one sees me, but in spite of it all, I will be free. But in spite of it all, I will be free. Open the cage, I want the light. I need my freedom to feel right. And ooh, ooh, set me free. I have been waiting an eternity. Don't turn your back, whatever you do. I'm only human, just like you. And ooh, ooh, I see the light coming from the people who join the fight. Coming from the people who join the fight. In my country, no one sleeps.
That was The Cage by Jemmy Bluestein and Augustine Leo. So we are here with a great learned erudite astrological scholar and practitioner, Bruce Schofield, wending our way through. But I did want to bring up that beautiful song in keeping with our cooperating with the pattern. You know, Saturn, our deepest dedication, next to Venus, stationing at 24 Pisces, which is the degree of rooting out corruption from priesthood or anywhere. It does exactly trine Mars in Cancer. And this is one of the things I've been interested in, decolonizing astrology. Why should Mars be in its, I guess it's fall in Cancer. Why should woofiness be dissed in any way when it's in the sign of protecting life? So I like Mars in Cancer, and many people's charts with Mars in Cancer are historians and protectors and everything. But that idea of protecting, you know, discerning, illuminating, and welcoming back. But are you game for such a thing, that we are aroused in our protecting of those who have been kidnapped and to want to see them returning safely?
Sure. Yeah. I mean,
okay.
A lot of concern, you know, and the damage that's going on is quite high, and the coincidence with the inferior conjunction is pretty obvious, I think. It was the inferior conjunction occurred on March 27th. It's been going on for a long time, but this is just really wild stuff and affecting a lot of people.
And remind me, I know you said it at the beginning of the show, and I want to go back and re-listen to this show and to you and read all the articles on your website, which is naturalastrology.com. But the inferior conjunction is when the Sun and Venus is on this side close to the Earth. But you had described it as, what, instability time? Or just remind us of what you said.
Yeah, from the Mesoamerican perspective, the inferior conjunction of Venus, which... like I said, in the West, we look at it as the middle of the Venus retrograde period. But this is when Venus is right between the Sun and the Earth. And it was considered to be when, hell would break loose and people would do crazy things. And, I've looked at people born at that time and Tanya Harding and, people who have been, very powerful and very strong, and they break the rules. And in general, people with Venus ahead of the Sun, after the inferior conjunction morning star phase, will tend to break with convention, social convention, in contrast to people born in the evening star phase, which will kind of get in line with it. And I remember having a friend in high school who was born in the evening star phase, and he and I eventually just couldn't agree, because I had no qualms breaking with convention, and he wouldn't, and he turned out to be a lawyer for Disney.
Wait, I'm an evening star person, and I break with convention whenever possible. But so there's always that.
It's a very good thing to think about, though, because the evening star phase wants to maintain some social stability, and you could have extreme conservatives and be out of, their whole perspective is out of whack, but they still their main goals are stability, and you can have people who are very unconventional, and they're looking at maybe a different society, they're part of a different society. And so in the context of that society, they want to preserve it. So, it depends on the level that you're looking at. And, you may be doing a lot of really good things for preserving a certain way of looking at the world and a certain kind of culture.
Right.
Which in a larger context is considered radical. Depends where we're located.
Yeah, and I remember I'm rejoining this Committee for the Republic, which is it's conservatives and progressives. I mean, everybody kind of thing out of D.C. And Bruce Fein is a a conservative constitutional lawyer, but a fair scholar, and one of the most conservative people that I met at a party. The person who organized this said, "That's the most conservative person in the room. Go talk to him." I go, "Okay, I will." And he said, "Well, what do you know?" About Edmund Burke, and I go, "Oh, not much." And he said, "This argument about small government, big government is irrelevant. What Burke said is the more the citizenry," this is a conservative speaking, "the more the citizenry cultivate self-responsibility," it's a Saturn thing, right? "The fewer rules and regulations you need." And I go, "Well, that's a great conversation. We can have that conversation. That's astrology. That's Taoism. That's conservative stuff." And he goes, "Taoism. I love Taoism. I haven't been able to speak about Taoism with anybody." Anyway, so we are off and running. But that idea of, the training of the citizen or the cultivation of citizenship was essential, right, to even the conservative deal. And then Bruce Fein, the constitutional lawyer, recently was saying executive orders do not exist, right? I mean, other presidents have used and abused them, nothing quite like this, but it does not exist in the Constitution. It is lawless from the get-go. So here we are in this intriguing conundrum, maybe we turn it to positive intrigue. And so the direness of now, and then you're cultivating the 84-year cycle, the Uranus in late Taurus cycle through American history. So there's the description, right? And you were saying, oh, and you're in a square and you're in your chart was like, you know, unpleasant or whatever. And then there's the cooperative instructions, which also too. So what is your description of now, drawing on all that you wrote about going way back to 1941 and 1857 and 1773 and 1689 and all of that? And then what is the guiding narrative for now in the most positive Uranus kind of way? I mean, I guess Uranus in Taurus, where it was 1941, so in America, Social Security, in Europe, fascism. Now it's kind of the reverse. But what is your delineation? And then what would be your most positive collaborative guiding in this realm?
Well, that's a big question. But I think that, you know, this is a fairly massive crisis for the, you know, the history of the country. And even before, I mean, the fact that you had this, you know, 1697 event and, you know, reaction to authority. And I think, we have years ahead of us. I mean, there's a lot of damage being done. You know, some people that call themselves declinists believe that this is, you know, the acceleration of the decline of the United States and the world. And that may be the case.
But, well, death of empire, that would be okay.
Yeah, you know, but hopefully enough people born with the evening star phase will rush in and try to hold this together.
Okay, right. We welcome all voices, myriad voices too. So Pussy Riot, let us join with Pussy Riot, who just came to the shores of America to deliver this public service announcement. So we will join with Pussy Riot. Many of you know Pussy Riot, you know, wild punk group in Russia, imprisoned, tormented, tortured, emerged free, now here. And here's their message to us.
Wake up, America!
Wake up, America!
Wake up, America!
Wake up,
America! America!
There you go. I think Uranus is very much wake up and wait, say what?
Gets right to it. Gets right to the point.
Gets right to it. Gets right. Yeah, wake up, America, and wake up and dream. Wake up and dream. You know, as many people have said for decades and decades, I feel more kinship with, you know, immigrants who come to this country with a dream than those who've forgotten how to dream. You know, so it's wake up and dream. But it's very moving, and they have lots of signs too, going, we've seen this. Don't think you're special. You know, this is a Putin move. You know, they're just, you know, yeah, wake up, America. So we are with you. Exhortation, 16 seconds of exhortation. We will do that. I view Uranus as you know, a wake up thing. And so in the 1940s, 1941, you know, and late 30s, Uranus in Taurus. But what do we have now that we didn't have then? I like to say, and I'm very kinned with Uranus in Taurus as participatory animism. This ancient endogenous part of ourselves that says, you know, animism is not a belief, it's just good manners, you know, and the whole realm of humans humbly cooperating with nature's guiding genius. Yes, Janine Benyus will be rescheduled in biomimicry. So what we have now, and I'll hand it back to you, but my the team here, exhortation, is, you know, to form alliances with the rest of flora, fauna, fungi on this planet, and to derive qualities of intelligence that when there's destruction, you know, the mitochondria, you know, go deep underground and come up with, you know, a new thing. You know, this is not working. I love David Graeber's book, The Dawn of Everything, History of Human Community from the Pleistocene on. It's really great. I don't know if you know that book. It's a wonderful book.
I read it.
You read it?
Yeah, I read it.
No, isn't
like
it great?
500
isn't it,
pages,
isn't,
right?
Right. Well, yeah, I keep reading it, and I listen to it on walks with the dogs under the moon, too, because it's so great. And then in his book, The Democracy Project, I love this part. He's talking about activists in Tahrir Square, you know, Egyptian Spring, good, and then, you know, not, but good at first. And so the tyranny is coming down on the press, on the Gemini, on meetings, on press, on radio, on media. But the activists notice that their cab drivers are very talkative. So at that time, if they called for a gathering and, you know, several hundred people showed up, they were like, oh, if 1,000 people showed up, they were like, oh, that's great. So all the activists got in cabs, different cabs, and they spoke to their cab drivers and said, we hear there's a gathering at Tahrir Square at 4 p.m. today. 500,000 people showed up. So I love that as, okay, you close down the media, but you have cab drivers. You know, that wherever it's not happening, it's happening somewhere else, you know, to kind of douse and feel that going, you know, and all of us little micros, I love my little post office. I love my little post office. And, you know, every time I go in there, you know, it's like, all right, we're rooting. Yes, we are. We're in this thing together. They're not going to, we're not going to let you take the post office. So I like thinking of a response and even a nature response in us to tyranny as inspiring ingenuity and responsive augury. I'm up for that. I'm up for this, you know, against all odds is a trickster thing. I mean, I like the trickster quality of Uranus, and I do like you bringing in the complexity, and I love changing my mind and expanding. I had a reading recently with Dennis Harness, Vedic astrologer, who said in Vedic, retrograde planets are considered more positive. It's like, and powerful. I'm like, okay, that's fun too. Anyway, so I'm grateful for all that you're contributing. But do you have an against all odds trickster, you know, wherever it's under attack, it'll pop up somewhere else kind of thing?
I'm not sure exactly what you mean there, but, you know, what I'm taking from the whole general gist here is that, you know, we have a massive crisis going on in this country, and there are these fundamental ideals that people who actually read the Declaration and the Constitution and, you know, various writings of the time really see that, you know, there's a dream here. There's an ambition to achieve some kind of a vision, and that's what I hear coming. You know what you're saying. You know, you're championing that vision. And what I would add to that is that the big problem now is, yeah, there's still a vision going on in this country, but it's degenerated to the point where it's the American dream is basically, you know, about successful hustling, and that we have elected a person who is, you know, an advanced practitioner of it, of hustling, and it's extraordinarily materialistic. It is, you know, emotionally, you know, idiotic, and yet this has been promoted, and it's being promoted like it has never had before, and it's in complete contradiction to the founding fathers, you know, ideal, which is an amazing ideal, and would incorporate things like recognizing, you know, not only different people and their rights, but the rest of the earth, you know, the rest of the biosphere. I mean, it has to be. Otherwise, we're just, you know, shooting ourselves in the foot. You know, human beings have just gotten way too powerful, and the anthropocentrism is disgusting, in my opinion. But people don't even know that's what's going on.
And what did you say? The end of the what is disgusting? I mean, many things could be, many things are disgusting, but which was the thing that you picked out?
Anthropocentrism.
Oh, yes. Well, I also honor that right now in Berkeley, the home team, Jupiter is rising in the east, and it's got a sesquiquadrate 135-degree angle to Pluto, which I've come to understand as awareness of danger. Awareness of danger, not reacting, freaking out, but like we should know. And I think what you're saying, and it's dangerous. And Pluto's Sabian is, you know, restoring a lost condition of spirituality. And in Aquarius, where it always pulls up shadow, it's like, can Americans discern the difference between a cult and a community. It's on the table, and a cult is the toxic mimic of community where people outsource their authority to some, you know, they outsource their Saturn to incompetent, I've got mine, you know, grifter. And I'm not, well, many things, this is an ongoing conversation forever, but a lot is on the line, you know, for the Earth, for everybody, for the entire community. And in America, it's like, can our citizenry, and we want to put our dedications on the table, discern the difference between the liberating trickster and the con man? And this is a huge theme, you know, there's a great movie in French, great movie, that became an American, The Remarkable Mr. Ripley or whatever. And in the French noir version, it's fantastic. It's about this con man, a murderous sociopathic con man. And at the end, there's this deeply satisfying comeuppance in which he is truly hoist on his own petard. And it's like, oh, you know, harmony or justice is restored. In the American version, he gets away with it and keeps killing people forever. And it's like, oh, America, because America still thinks, like, oh, the con man, they're kind of rooting for the con man. And so I think that's on the table if we want Uranus to, even his little glyph looks like an archaic key, to unlock this, to discern. But there is a huge, you know, in keeping with Graeber, and I'm so glad you read the whole thing, and I've read almost the whole thing, and his great chapter on Teotihuacan, and him writing this book, that it took him 10 years, and then he died, right? But he left with a dedication, this Saturn thing, to us now. You know, always remember that human society has had the capacity to change rapidly from authoritarian to egalitarian, and the other way around, right? And then he uses the example of Teotihuacan. You know, in the Mayan model, hereditary priesthood, human sacrifice, great, great culture, but, you know, all the money's going to the top. And then they changed their mind. And the money went to housing, and they didn't do wars or, you know, huge pyramids. So do you feel the hum of David Graeber behind us going, just remember this, you know, the big changes, what kind of big changes would we like?
Yeah, it's the hum of Pluto going through Aquarius. You know, one of the things about Pluto and Aquarius, I mean, you go back to, 1776 when it was just going into Aquarius and we had the war for independence. And the French Revolution was around that time, too. Pluto and Aquarius implies that the people are going to get sick of this power and are going to do something about it. And that's what I think we're in. And in a way, in hindsight, it would have been very easy to predict that Trump would be president because you need an autocrat to rebel against. You know, in other words, in order for Pluto to work out its business in Aquarius, you have to have people like Trump and Putin, you know, to fight.
And Netanyahu and Orban and I mean all the little dictators, all the uninitiated Mars tyrants who haven't worked out their personal stuff, so they're working it out in the world.
Yeah, I was going to say people with personality disorders. I mean,
yes.
In order to be a dictator like that, you have to have a certain kind of warp in your mind, which probably had a selective advantage 100,000 years ago, or maybe even 10,000 years ago, but it's out of place.
Well, no other animal species on this planet would outsource leadership to someone incompetent who did not care about the collective well-being of the pack. Only humans, and I think one group of baboons, but they got over it. But you know, only us. And then, have you seen the series Turn on the Revolutionary War, Spies in the Revolutionary War?
No, I haven't seen it. What's that on?
Oh! It's a couple years old. You can find it. You're a good detective. It's super great. And it's a telling of the Revolutionary War and how fragile, how small it was, also how cruel it was on every single side. You know, after I watched it twice, I Googled, you know, was the Revolutionary War really as cruel on all sides as depicted? Oh yeah, whoa, mean, terrible things on all sides. But there's, Robert Townsend is a Quaker who doesn't want to hurt anybody, and he's a great trickster. Anyway, there's a million great things in it, and the spies, how important the spies were. But Robert Townsend, being a Quaker, but he's in charge of the bar where the Tory naval officers gather, he's gathering intelligence. But he goes to the basement where the printing press is, and they're printing out the codes for the British Navy, and he just changes everything so that nothing agrees with anything. And the British Navy is like, "What? Oh no, that's a red flag. It should mean that." And the nobody's hurt, right? The British Navy is thrown into disarray, and it's like, "I want more like that." I think that's a good
What's the name
trickster
of it?
move. Oh, it's called Turn, Turn. Yes, call me after you've watched it. It's pretty great, in its
Sounds good.
complexity. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
It's really good. And and also, just where we're, because the stories exist, and Mars and Cancer, I view Cancer, history is the womb of time, and as a very historic time, as you're guiding us, and we all want to go back. And then just a little thing, someone asked Mao what he thought about the French Revolution, and he said, "It's too soon to say." Anyway, which is that's very witty Chinese. But back to yourself, yeah, so the rebellion against, and then I'm sort of no fixed future kind of person. It's all in play, but to look to the past and the mentors, Sun conjunct Chiron this right now, the mentor is dedicated to protecting life and inviting them back in. So, all right, we're in our last minute, Bruce Schofield. Is there any blessing or warning or woof or exhortation that you want to send out into the world?
Well, I would say people should use this opportunity to learn as much as they can, and certainly about the past, because that's the foundation of
Yes.
wisdom.
That's
Knowing
great.
the history, you got to start somewhere, and that's a good place. But
That's great.
educating oneself, and we have tremendous opportunities now, like never before. The real benefit of the internet is probably that. A lot of the other stuff that goes on is pretty bad. And being able to discriminate between garbage and real reporting and journalism, there's an
Yes.
opportunity to use that internet system in a way to broaden your understanding and make better decisions. And
Yes.
unfortunately, there's a push towards the opposite going on.
Yep. That's
That's
right.
too
That's why
bad.
we're stirring our inner trickster, defiant, revolutionary selves with kindness better than the Revolutionary War even. So thank you so much, Bruce Schofield, wonderful, knowledgeable, erudite astrologer ally to us all. His website is naturalastrology.com. There's a million things to read there, to be better educated and informed citizenry. Thank you so much, Bruce Schofield.
Thank you.
And
My pleasure.
thank you, Kirsten Thomas. Always great board op. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week. You can find us at coyotenetworknews.com and also Visionary Activist Show on Patreon. You can say hi for backstage notes. Woof, woof, woof. Thank you, team.